Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prusquintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table at the studios of KHOY Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa. Thank you for joining us today. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. For information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub or stop by and ask for Marcus.
Thanks for joining us today. We have a good time here. We talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. Today we're going to be talking about, there's a lot of news items that Donna wants to talk about and sort of relating to animals and insects and things. And we have a dip into the archives. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a pretty darn good one. Yes, it is. Also, I've kind of keep track of things. I kind of like to know where we are in the lunar calendar just to make sure all the spirits and gods and goddesses are happy with us. And I don't know exactly what my calendar says, but I've noticed that right now we are in the time of the dog hair moon. My dog is shedding like crazy. So the dog hair moon, it's an annual event at our house, and it only goes on for, a couple weeks. It kind of all falls out in clumps.
Yeah,
and
I got two long-haired dogs.
See,
we got the dog hair moon for sure.
Well, we might as well celebrate it because we love our furry little friends.
Celebrate
yes,
by
do.
Running the vacuum cleaner.
That is. It's kind of a ritual. People have been doing this sort of things for years. Yes, yes. In the garden, I've been enjoying kind of putting in the last of the vegetables, last of the seeds. Got my bean trellises up, and all the tomatoes are up and running, and the okra's finally showing up. After a kind of a cool spring, and it is still cool
today.
Everything's
a little slow,
Yeah, everything is kind of peeking out, and we're hoping for the best, hoping for a good rain this week. Yeah, yeah. Actually, I think we're moving into officially what is called the strawberry moon. But it isn't the dog hair moon, but that's what I'm celebrating.
Say the strawberries might be having a hard time this year. It was a little too much water.
Ooh. Yeah, I
You
think
know how
so
that
too.
Makes them mushy and then they go off really fast and they're not worth harvesting because the bugs get all right.
Ooh,
this will not be a peak strawberry year, I'm afraid. We'll have to get a report from the Berry Patch Farm. I'll call Judy Henry.
Very good.
We'll let you know next week. About this year. Something like that.
Oh. Well, Donna has been at it again. She made a nice big bunch of fudge for an event this week and I had some this weekend. Tell us what was in your fudge this time.
Oh, I was calling it a lemonade, my lemonade fudge, because it has just a very fruity summer flavor. But so here's the trick, okay? So you go out to, what's the name of the Asian store out on Lincoln Way?
Unimart?
The Unimart. Okay, the Unimart has yuzu. It's called citron jam. Oh, no, citron, I don't know. It's in a jar. And I think it's a traditional Korean thing where they mix it with hot water and make a tea. Citron tea, it's called. But what it really is just yuzu in what we would call a marmalade. So it's strips of yuzu, which is an Asian lemon-like citrus that's just slightly brighter than a lemon. So I took the yuzu marmalade and I dumped it into the Cuisinart with two tubs of dried sour cherries.
Oh.
So I blended it all till it was really mixed into tiny little pieces. So I used that as the basis for the fudge which is basically, you melt the chocolate chips, the bittersweet chocolate chips and cream. And then I put in that yuzu mixture for the sweetener. Then, of course, I added a little pepper, a little coriander, a pinch of salt. And some dashes of lemon oil.
Oh, now, who would have thought? Lemon-ish and chocolate.
And I forgot one more thing I put in. So King Arthur, the King Arthur Bread Flour Company, has a catalog. In that catalog, they have an essential oil also called Fiori di Sicilia, which is Flowers of Sicily, which is a lemon and vanilla oil. So these, I put these two oils in. You just do a few drops, but it really kicks the flavor up. So the fudge came out, I thought, rather nicely. Very lemony, chocolate, bright, summery kind of flavors.
A summery fudge. And it is, too, because I'm having a little peace right now, and so is Evan Taylor, our excellent engineer. And I think we're both happy. Fudge, anytime. And this is a fudge with a lemon and cherry.
Lemon and cherry. And the other thing one can do with the same mixture is if you melt it, you can have hot fudge sundaes. Now that is summer sublime.
Good. Always thinking of good summer things to eat.
We like our sweets.
Very good. Very good. You have some news items from the Donalana Kitchen News Department. Tick-a-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick-tick. That's the ticker tape that we have here. We always like to bring news and environment and farming sort of information to you. What do you have for us today, Donna?
Well, one thing, I pulled this from the National Magazine of the Sierra Club. Mm-hmm. 5 DEET-free ways to protect yourself from bugs.
Oh, DEET. Now, that's D-E-E-T.
Yeah, because DEET is the thing that's in most of the conventional bug sprays, and it's not the most pleasant thing. You know, you're not always – most commercial bug sprays have DEET, which is a synthetic repellent that was developed for the U.S. military in the 1950s.
Ooh. Let's be a little cautious when you hear those words. Okay, DEET,
yeah, some people experience skin rashes, nausea, eye irritation. You know, it's kind of heavy-duty stuff. It also can damage plastic and synthetic gear, doesn't easily degrade in naturally occurring bodies of water, means that if you go swimming with it, it goes in, you know. Anyway, so there are other things that one can use. So they mentioned 5 different things. So the first one is the oil of lemon eucalyptus. Lemon eucalyptus tree. And then it's found in product forms of repels plant-based lemon eucalyptus insect repellent number 2 has it in. The next one is the really common one is citronella. A lot of the products like Buzz Away, I've used that. It's you know, it's pretty strong smelling. I don't mind it. It's very lemon. Or even like Whole of Nursery sells that rose geranium with a citronella smell. They call it the mosquito plant. Mm-hmm. You could plant that around your patio. It wouldn't hurt, and it's rather pretty in the foliage. Mm-hmm. The next thing they mention is neem, N-E-E-M. The neem tree is indigenous to the Indian subcontinent. Neem is in a lot of natural products like toothpaste and things like that. In fact, apparently in India, they use to brush their teeth. One can use a neem stick where they just kind of split the ends and use the bark to scrub your teeth with.
And neem is not, has never been used for the U.S. military.
No.
Neem is good. All right.
But there are. Ones that have both citronella and neem in it. Now, here's one for you, Lana. Catnip oil is apparently somewhat effective. Now, the last one that they list, I got a kick out of this one. So it's grapefruit seed extract. And it was saying, it says, if you're looking for an insect repellent with an active ingredient that's safe enough to drink, keep your eyes peeled for products with Nootkatone, N-O-O-T-K-A-T-O-N-E, Nootkatone maybe or something like that. Now, grape seed extract, it has you can drink it, it's fine, but it tastes really nasty, so don't be drinking this stuff. But it's, so the CDC was looking for a natural product that would be practical and pleasant for people to use, and they're doing some research on that. They think that it's as a bonus, researchers are hopeful that the light citrusy scent and non-greasy feel of Nootka Tone containing products will make people actually want to apply it. It also apparently is effective against ticks, which is important around here, certain mosquitoes, and bed bugs.
Oh.
So it's, you can get that in a 4-ounce spray bottle, something called Mozzie Magic, M-O-Z-Z-I Magic.
Huh. Well, so, because the bugs are out, yes?
They are.
The mosquitoes kind of are
And we might
us.
Be in for it this year because of all the rain we've had. Ooh. So prepare yourself. There's 5 DEET-free products. So as usual, when you're buying something, read the label, okay?
Very good. Very good. You have other news.
Oh, here it is.
I knew it'd show
up. Right, this was the from Practical Farmers of Iowa. So we're going to be talking about lard on the rest of the show and other meaty subjects. But this from Practical Farmers of Iowa, they just did carcass characteristics, meat quality, and fatty acid composition of 100% grass-fed beef. So these two farmers, which are our local fellows, it determined that, yes, indeed, the fat composition of our locally fed grass beef is quite healthy.
Huh.
I mean, it's much more specific than that, but it was the average omega 6-3 ratio of grass-fed ribeyes was 1.77-1 from Bruce Carney's farm and 1.83-1 from the Schmitz farm. So there you go. Get your local grass-fed beef right on the grill.
Yeah,
it's good for you.
Moving into summer, I think we're over the hump. For a while, people wouldn't – grass-fed beef had – oh, you wouldn't want to have that. You want your fatty sort of marbled meat. And now we're finding that when cows are healthy, when beef cows are healthy – so it's pretty good on grass.
Well, but it's also more work has been done in the last 10 years on the genetics of, you know, you can't just put any old cow that's been bred to be raised in a feedlot out on grass. And the same is true for pigs. You know, if you take a pig that's been bred to be grown in a confinement operation and you decide to pasture it, you often don't get the quality of meat or the fat composition mm-hmm. that one is looking for. But now there's been a good amount of grass-fed breeding in each ecosystem, including ours. And that's why this PFI test was particularly relevant, because these cows have been grown here in Iowa with, you know, each of the farmers has kind of been developing their own breeding genotype. And so now they actually, you know, did an analysis of the carcass and found out, yes, in fact, this is working. We are getting good fatty acid ratios in our local beef. So hooray to these farmers, and they'll just keep doing what they've been doing because it's obviously working. And that makes better eating quality.
Ah, very good.
Yep.
These PFI farmers, Practical Farmers of
Iowa.
There are
some clever people out
They try new things, and then they study it, and they research it, and they
have... Well, we forget that Practical Farmers of Iowa actually is a research organization. It is a farmer-driven, on-farm research organization. Very mm-hmm. unique, one of the best farming organizations in the country right here, folks. I'm very proud of that organization. They do good work.
Very good. So good news in the meat department. Yes, it is. Oh, this doesn't have anything to do with grass-fed beef, but this does have to do with a meat of sorts. I had some interesting smoked fish over the weekend.
What kind of fish?
Now, I didn't know you could eat this. Buffalo fish. Think of a large, like, bottom feeder, honker sort of fish.
Is that a kind of catfish?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, something like that. But, you know, as a fish, you'd think, oh, I don't know if
but
I want to eat that.
It's a native Iowa species?
Yeah, I believe so. Anyway, it was locally caught, and it was smoked, and it was absolutely delicious. It must have been a large beastie because there was a big slab of stuff that you could flake off with a fork and... Buffalo fish. I didn't know.
I've never heard of a buffalo fish.
Well,
it sounds like a made-up name. I mean, is somebody pulling your leg or what? I don't know.
Now, it was my friend Ben, and I usually eat what he says here.
Well,
here,
it sure probably tasted good, but maybe he made the name up.
I don't know.
Somebody made that
but
name
it,
up.
It was right? good. I suppose when you smoke something, it's
You can
it's
make
good.
Almost anything yeah. taste good
and
if
it
you
was
smoke
dandy.
It, right.
it good. Well, see? Now, see? Good. See?
Big Mouth Buffalo. Does it say what kind it is, Evan? He's pulled it up on the internet just to prove me wrong. What's it say?
It's the largest in the Catostomidae family, so I would guess it's related to the catfish.
Catfish, but, right. As soon as she said bottom yeah. feeder, I'm thinking, yeah. Well, yuck.
Other common names are gourdhead, redmouth buffalo, buffalo fish, Bernard buffalo, roundhead, or brown buffalo. Not a carp. Not a member of the carp,
carp
family, though.
I have a prejudice against catfish from childhood. I grew up eating enough Mississippi catfish that tasted like mud. that and maybe it's just as a child, you know, they're kind of weird looking.
They
don't
are.
You think?
They are, but we, Donna, on this show, we encourage eating all
that's
the parts.
That's right. As Jeffrey Steingarten, who used to write for Vogue magazine, he's a well-known food writer, he used to say, if you eat anything 10 times, you will learn to like it. So.
Well, I'd eat this again anyway.
Good.
Thanks to Ben for smoking something called a buffalo fish. And it may not be the prettiest fish, but it was tasty. Well, every now and then I like to pull up a poem or two, something nice to read. This is a poem I found about the contents of a refrigerator. Yeah, it is. Written by an author called Carly Sachs. She teaches yoga, too, in Kent, Ohio. I got this from a anthology.
Oh, it's from Prairie Gold.
Anthology of the American Heartland, Prairie Gold, edited by Lance M. Sekoff, Xavier Cavazos, and Stephanie Brooke Trout. It came out a few years ago.
This is from the ISU.
Environmental Writing.
Yeah. Writing in the Environment Program, mm-hmm. yes.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So here is a little poem. Real butter. A refrigerator tells a story. When you invite me over, I like to open the door. The fleeting world within a fleeting world. The bookshelf of the body. The condiments that cement your future. What you consume consumes you. A refrigerator is a Zen garden or a minimalist sculpture or a graveyard for half-full mustards and mayonnaise. Takeout containers say you're not here or you don't like to dirty your hands. I look for local cheese, milk that comes in jars, homemade jam. I want a good party, a gathering of just enough. Ginger and tamari, local eggs, arugula, maybe cornichons or at least kosher dills. A French blue, a Sauvignon Blanc. And everyone these days seems to have a thing for Greek yogurt. Meet me with your figs and heirloom tomatoes. I want to say, have you tried their stout or met the new cheesemaker at the farmer's market? But I'll be happy if there's real butter and cream for my morning coffee. In some languages, hunger and desire share the same root. The beginning of the narrative. A refrigerator is a map or a snapshot taken. A place of longing and belonging. It was Real Butter by Carly Sachs. And I'll read another short one here from Prairie Gold. This is about a garage sale in Iowa. It is the season. Garage sale
Absolutely.
Signs are up all over the place. And this is by actually someone I know, Melissa Savigny. She lived in Ames here for a while, and she has since moved to Arizona. I believe she works for NPR, National Public Radio, out there now. So hello to Mel out there. Garage sale in Iowa. We look for garage sales each summer on Saturday mornings. Arrive early enough to get the best picks from the clutter. You could always find the things they didn't want to lose. Calico squares for a quilt, The toolbox of wrenches worn shiny from use. A 2-volume dictionary, the first page open to gratitude, grief. Sometimes we'd spend dimes from the grocery money to ransom the seller's peace of mind. Exchange a story. The antique bookshelves I wanted to fill. The cherry wood scrap you'd use to make a chisel's snapped handle. All week I'd craved the relief in their eyes. Garage sellers who knew to post their signs early before the rising sun brought the unforgiving light. A little note on Garage Sale in Iowa by Mel Savigny. A little poem to kind of cleanse our palate between things here. Yes. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. That was a little bit of a reel there by a duo called Belshazzar's Feast. Paul Sarton on oboe fiddle, and he sings too, and Paul Hutchinson on accordion. That CD is called Drop the Reed, Belshazzar's Feast. Well, we often like to dip back into our archives. We've been at this a while, and there's some good things we like to just reheat those leftovers and enjoy them again. And here's a good one. In May 2016, Donna waxed eloquent on lard. Yes, she did.
Oh, we love the lard.
Yeah, and this is a good bit we'd like to share with you again, since we were talking about carcasses and things, and well, buffalo fish has nothing to do with lard, but let's listen to this fine audio segment. So, Donna, tell us about lard.
Well, lard is one of my favorite fats, and it's, we are in pig country here, so the lard should be ubiquitous. Of course, it's not. You can actually buy lard at the grocery store, but that's not really what I recommend eating, because that's been sanitized, bleached, preservatives added.
Bleached? Why would you bleach it?
Well, because you want it to look like Crisco.
Oh dear.
I know. This is a long and sordid history of how we got from lard to something made from cottonseed, which was called cottolene or something like that, and then to the soybean version, and then was called Crisco. I mean, when I was growing up, Crisco wasn't even, it was a brand, but it was used as just the word for shortening, basically, know. I probably ate a lot of chicken fried in Crisco, and my mother was a big pie maker with Crisco. And, of course, it worked beautifully.
It was handy. Well, lard, it's that wonderful stuff. It's from the fat. It's what we crave. It's the stuff that holds our cookies and cakes together.
Two cakes in the last couple of weeks with lard, because I just wanted to see what it would do. And it's wonderful. I think I may not go back to butter cakes again, just because. But the thing is, here in Ames, we're in a very envious position, because we do have a lot of sort of smaller farmers producing, pastured pork, and you can buy the fat and make your own lard. It's quite simple. Or you can buy lard. I'm sure Wheatsfield has it. But freshly rendered and then refrigerated lard with no additives. Probably Story City Locker has it. We actually have a really readily available supply in town of very, very good lard.
Good. Can you talk a little bit about rendering lard?
Rendering lard. Okay.
So how one does
one
do that?
Well, there's two types of fat on the pig. First of all, I want to say that before the invention of, before we got into our oil-producing age and lubricants came out of petroleum products, lard and pig fat was widely, widely used for greasing all kinds of things, and as was beef tallow, candles, soap. You know, people did not throw the fat away. It was called the fat of the land. That meant the good parts. Or in English, like in Shakespeare, to lard the earth meant to make it rich, and lard was actually a verb for enriching. Fats are precious. They're very important in the human diet. Our brains are made out of fats, for goodness sake. So in a culture, especially, where we were burning a lot of calories and busy being peasants and working hard, fats were very, very important and scarce. So it was not wasted. And farmers, before the turn of the 1900s, actually made more money off the fat on the pig than they did off of the meat.
Oh, my.
You know, we had to grease a lot of things.
Well, the Industrial Revolution started there in the mid-1900s, and there were all kinds of things being invented that needed
lubricated.
Oh, yeah,
and lots of machines that needed those fats. So lard was a very, very important part of that. Then somewhere in the 1890s or so, they decided, there was a lot of cotton going on, and the cotton seeds were a waste product. So they learned how to press the cotton seeds, and then they created a market for that oil.
Ah.
And then they created a mixture of beef tallow and cotton seed that they was sold as cotolene, C-O-T-T-O-L-E-N-E. And they promoted it.
Was that to eat or to?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Cotolene combines the science and skill of 19th centuries and for health. Cotolene, the healthful shortening. Fairbanks, who was the big promoter of this and kind of cornered the market, his favorite saying was, cotolene shortens your food and lengthens your life.
Oh, well then.
So there was a point. Actually, when my son was at ISU, he wrote a paper called Move Over Lardass, and he interviewed my mother about, when she switched because she was that generation. So she was born in 1911, and she grew up on a farm in southeast Missouri. And, of course, the only fats they had were what they made on the farm. So they rendered their – I can even remember going to butcherings when my uncle still had the farm, and they say, oh, you use everything but the squeal. So to render lard, there's the leaf lard, which is, I believe, around the kidneys, which is a more delicate fat and is supposed to be the supreme fat for pie making. So that can be separated out. But mostly all the pig fat can be, I've made it by cutting it into chunks, not too small, and putting it in a pan in the oven. And you just kind of, on a lowish sort of heat, 300, 275, and you let the fat melt. And you just keep pouring it off and straining it, and it goes down to smaller and smaller pieces. And what's left, people also eat as they're kind of like cracklings. You can, it's the crispy bits so that you don't have to waste any of it. But that's how you render lard. It's a very easy process.
Ideally, you melt it. It turns clear in the heat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You strain out the icky bits.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it solidifies up again, it gets that
and
milky white.
Yeah, and it stores really well in the fridge. So what my mom was telling my son was when she moved from the farm to Cape Girardeau, which was a town of about 30,000, she switched to Crisco because at the time, and this is still true, this is why I wouldn't just buy the normal packaged lard at the at the supermarket, she said you didn't want to buy lard from someone that you didn't know because, you know, it might not have been refrigerated properly. It does go rancid eventually. So people of her generation were concerned when moving off the farm and not being able to make their own. They bought what was considered cleaner, purer, more modern. And then she moved during the war, World War II, to Chicago. And so that was very, very urban. And, of course, my mother was not the only person. Large amounts of people left rural America and moved into cities during those periods. And shortening was touted as sophisticated, cleaner, more modern. Pigs were like for poor people to eat, you know, and there was the whole.
That's ironic. Chicago, the.
Yeah, the meatpacking center.
The meatpacking center.
The universe,
they had
right.
Lots of pigs there.
I know. Well, lard has become almost a waste product. The meat processors kind of sell it to, you know, even the organic lard, like Organic Valley, just has to sell their excess pig fat off onto the market where it's, you know, processed into either lubricants or there's still a lot of Mexican restaurants do still cook with lard. So you might be finding it there. But I highly recommend just getting, because we have such a good local supply. We're really, really lucky. And of course, everybody still knows that lard makes the best pies.
Yes, it does. It really does.
Well, there was a period where there was some kind of organically derived shortening type of product, and now there are some other products that are marketed as vegetable shortenings that are non-hydrogenated. Here is the crux of the story, and this is the really, you know. Those of us with a historical memory must keep this sort of story in mind. Okay, so pig fat was denigrated. It was considered indigestible, unhealthy. The marketers and the health people went crazy at the turn of the century, saying, oh, no, don't eat that stuff. It's not good for you, da-da-da-da-da, eat this new product, da-da-da-da-da, and it got more processed fats, more, you know. Then, of course, we find out in fairly recent history, no big surprise, that both margarine and Crisco, which were invented to replace butter and lard, are actually very unhealthy. They're made from hydrogenated oils, which it turns out are highly artery clogging. Yeah. And very unhealthful. So do not eat any sort of – in fact, there are – I think in New York and some other places, they're outlawing the use of those hydrogenated fats because they are so, so unhealthy. So here we had a whole century where the processors of industrial food sold us a product replacing, you know, the things that humans have eaten for thousands of years, lard and butter and yum, yum, yum. With the newfangled modern equivalent, which turns out to be radically dangerous for your health.
And it does seem that we buy it. We listen to advertising, and we just plain follow.
Not all of us are going to do this deep biochemical research. It's just, you know, and the research, frankly, had not been done. It's not like they knew it was bad and they were trying to pull the wool over our eyes. It's just that everybody thought, oh, isn't this cool? Look at this white, fluffy, oily stuff that comes in a can and doesn't need refrigeration and is so clean and so pure and so cool. And
it's well, we were
lesson learned.
We were convinced by
ourselves, basically.
There were supposed doctors on radio telling us that not only lard, but cigarettes at a time were considered good.
Yeah. So I never know. I come back to this thing all the time where I have to say, you know, we can send a man to the moon, but we still don't have really thorough science on what's going on inside our microbiome, how our food is digested, how nutrition really works. There's a lot we don't know.
Ha! Huh. I have a question. What is this term shortening? Reading in recipes, they say shortening. Now, that refers to lard, butter, Crisco, There's
well, and the
in,
fats
in,
that
the
are
fat stuff.
Hardened at like refrigerator temperatures and still are fairly solid at room temperatures. I mean, you know, soft butter, soft lard at room temperature is soft, but it's still it's not olive oil. It's not liquid. It doesn't puddle up.
So why didn't they call it hard or soft? Why short?
It comes from the fact that that kind of fat with that structure does something to the gluten, and it's called shorting it. That makes it flakier?
Short strands of gluten.
There you go. So yeah. That's where the shortening word comes from.
Ah, there you go.
Because it's very good to bake with.
Yes, it does. Making things fluffy. Important to make things fluffy.
Fluffy good. Cakes, fluffy pie crusts.
Good.
Yum.
Sheep? Can you make... Do sheep have fat that we eat, or do you use sheep fat for other stuff?
Gee, I don't know. It's probably a... rare commodity.
Right.
They're not particularly fat. It's like sheep's milk cheeses, which are wonderful. You know, there's some breeds that are bred for, I mean, the pigs were actually, because the fat was so valuable, they were bred to be fatter and fatter. Mm-hmm. And some pigs have just, you know, the wonderful quality of the fat. Mm-hmm. Now, it's the other lean white meat is, you know, that's a whole other breeding going in the opposite direction.
Well, then there is... chicken fat and duck fat, which is not
absolutely.
Which is not
absolutely.
Do you cook with that? I mean, do you bake
well,
with that?
Well, duck fat for cooking is highly, highly
That's
prized.
That's lovely stuff.
And people, I've had pastry crusts made with chicken fat.
Oh,
It's called schmaltz, the chicken fat,
yes,
when
that's
it's rendered.
The word. And one of the better words that we thank the Yiddish language for that.
Right.
Oh, that's a wonderful word.
That's what I'm saying. Fats were not thrown away, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you remember even in our household, we had a little jar that was kept by the stove for bacon drippings?
Yes.
Talk about something that makes food really good.
I still do that because as we are coming into the green season here, we have got like collards and kale coming up. And if you have some bacon drippings, that's a good way to start.
Well, yes, lard is good for that too.
And lard is good for that too.
And duck fat is, especially in French cuisine, is highly, highly prized. It's a wonderful cooking fat. And then they do something... like it's called confit, which is, and we used to do this too when meats were canned. If you cook and pack meat like shredded chicken, shredded pork in fat, it preserves it quite a long time. So like a confit of chicken livers or a confit, that means they're just kind of cooked in the fat and then put into the jar with fat sealing it. Fat
That's
can
right.
seal
I've,
the tops
I've seen
of jars.
That. I've seen it. It's like the little cap that you put on.
Yeah, yeah. So don't waste those fats.
Oh.
Eat them judicious. Now, the other thing is lard has a healthier fatty acid profile than butter. It's got more of whatever the good ones are. So I think making cakes and pies with lard rather than butter is actually slightly healthier.
Lard, something that we probably don't think about much, and whenever you've got a pig or cow or any other kind of beastie, there's fat on it, and there's good, usable stuff. Tell us about the wonderful world of lard, Donna.
Well, you know, I this started a couple weeks ago. I decided to get on a campaign of really cooking with more lard and less, you know, we've all become very olive oil centric. But you know what? We don't grow olives around here. And the closest olive oils are probably from California, maybe Mexico. Most of them are coming from Europe, and I went, I gotta rearrange my brain a little bit. So I started looking online for a good book about lard. Even, you know, I just wanted to see what was out there. So I got one called 100% Natural Lard, The Lost Art of Cooking with Your Grandmother's Secret Ingredient from the editors of Grit magazine. So it contains 150 time-tested recipes from that your family will love. But I wanted it mostly because they have cake recipes in it.
Ah.
So this is my second cake that I've made with lard. This is a sort of pound cake. And I've brought some. What do you think? It's called a buttermilk pound cake. What do you think, Lana?
It is delicious. Very nice and moist.
Mm-hmm.
Golden and crumbly and good.
I would say it's certainly as good as baking with butter. It was kind of interesting, you know, because lard has a slight flavor to it.
Yes, yes.
And it's nice. It's rich. And mm-hmm. So when I first put it in a cake, I thought, how's this flavor going to go with the sweet flavors? And it's perfect.
It's wonderful.
You don't actually taste it, but it's there. It's like another layer of umami or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, you put this. This is a bundt cake sort of pound cake.
This was a problem. The recipe recommended using, lightly dust a tube pan with lard, grease, and then dust with flour. So I got my tube pan, I made the batter, and then when I poured it in, I thought, you know, this is an awful lot of batter for the tube pan.
Oh!
I came right up to the edge, so I stuck a baking sheet under it just mm-hmm. in case. It's a good thing I did because the cake, of course, completely overflowed and filled up the whole center cavity of the tube pan. Well, it's okay. It worked out. I got a cake within a cake. When I lifted the tube pan off, there was another, like, perfectly formed little conical cake. So,
oh, goodness, like the cone of a volcano in the middle there.
Yeah, yes, more or less. So really, it should have said bake it in a bundt pan. You need a bigger mm-hmm. a bigger cavity. But the recipe it was so easy. It was, and we'll put it on the website. So a cup of lard softened, and then you, with your little hand mixer, you beat in 2 cups of granulated sugar, and then you whip it up and let the sugar start to dissolve. Then 4 eggs, a cup of buttermilk. Now, I didn't have buttermilk, so I actually put in some of my kefir. And it says, then you beat in the flavor, which is they use 2 teaspoons of lemon extract. Well, of course, I had to add more. I put in a little orange extract and a little Fiore di Sicilia. And then I put in, which you can order from King Arthur Flowers in case you don't know what that is. It's very floral and lemon. It's citrusy,
mm-hmm.
but I tend to throw it in a lot of things. And then I put a little ground coriander seed, so it has a little more flavoring. So you make, and then you just, it's as simple as can be. Then you dump in 3 cups of flour and then 1/2 teaspoon of soda, salt, and baking powder. And you can do this all in one bowl with the mixer.
I like those kind.
I know.
Back up to the use of the lard. In what stage is the lard when you put, is it like white-looking butter, or is it kind of melty? Or
It's like, you know, how if you were making a pound cake with butter, you would soften it at room temperature.
Room temperature, and it pretty much...
And it just beats right into the sugar.
Okay.
Couldn't be simpler.
Courage out there, folks. Try something new. This is buttermilk pound cake.
Yeah, I'm going to try some things that I don't even have recipes for. The next time I have to bake, I'm just going to use lard, where I think you can make it a straight-out substitute for butter in a lot of your sort of cakey, bakey kinds of things.
There you go. So, lard. It's not just for pie crust anymore. That was a wonderful little segment all about lard. We don't think about lard enough.
Yeah, and we just looked because we thought we had posted the recipe for that lard cake, and we have not. My apologies. So we will get that posted to the website.
Yes.
The buttermilk lard cake.
If you want to find out more about the Donalana Kitchen and a lot of other stuff on this fine radio station, go to khoifm.org, and you will find the KHOI page there with all sorts of good shows. You can go to the talk section and find the Donalana Kitchen show there, and we've got a recipe page, we've got archives. If you just can't get enough of us,
we got 5 years of shows in the archives.
It's a bit much, but we are worth visiting. I tell you, and good recipes, and we will get that other recipe up. Yes, and I think there's even a picture of picture of us there, just in case you wonder what the heck we look like. We do have fun doing this show. This is KHOI. This is Community Radio for the Heart of Iowa. And, yeah, we've been at this a while, Donna. Yes, we have. I have a little something. I pulled up a book of The Wit and Wisdom from Poor Richard's Almanac just why not? Benjamin Franklin had lots to say about things. And here are some of his thoughts about social relations. You've probably heard of the one, a food-related one, that fish and visitors stink after 3 days. Yeah, that's a Benjamin Franklin
thing. Yes, my mother quoted a lot of Benjamin Franklin aphorisms as I was growing up.
Very good. Some more food kind of things about social relations. Tart words make no friends. A spoonful of honey will catch more flies than a gallon of vinegar. Oh, yes. He that drinks his cider alone, let him catch his horse alone. Huh? Yeah. Eat to please thyself, but dress to please others. Huh? Think about that for a while. When you speak to a man, look on his eyes, and when he speaks to thee, look on his mouth. You never know. Promises may get thee friends, but non-performance will turn them into enemies. And here's a little one. Praise little, dispraise less. Very good.
Okay. Wisdom. So we had some going-ons around town.
Mm-hmm.
We're happy to report we had Sharon from the Lockwood Cafe out at Reliable Street did a Kickstarter, and she was on talking about beginning a little restaurant here in Ames. So the Kickstarter was very successful. They went even over the budget, and they had a little thank you to everybody party on Saturday, which is why I was making fudge for the party. That was lots of fun. The weather was perfect.
Oh, so Lockwood Cafe, it is not open yet. It will be open very soon, and it is a...
Under construction.
A most unlikely sort of site, and it is charming. It is in an old Doughboy grain elevator on the northwest edge of Ames, right next to the tracks. Yes, the trains go by every now and then, but trains go through Ames all the time. But in a grain elevator, in this big, big structure, and there on the bottom, right on first floor, it's been turned into a little restaurant, and it will be open soon, the Lockwood Cafe.
And on those same train tracks in downtown Ames, at the old railroad station, we do have finally the opening of Cornbread. So I dropped by. They are actually open. They also took a long time getting there. Quite the remodel that they've done. It's really, really charming because that's a beautiful old building. And they put balconies to take advantage of the high ceilings. And they're going to have an outdoor garden, which is not open yet. But they are now open. So this is the train station right down on Main Street. They are now open for lunch 11 to 2. Then they have the bar and snacks are open from 2 to 5, and dinner is from 5 to 10 every day except Sunday. They have I kind of walked around and noticed that between the train tracks and the station building, they've put all their smoking equipment in and a lot of very heavy-duty stuff. They're serious about meat.
Ooh.
So the menu is, well, if you know it from the trucks and
yeah, it started out as a food truck.
Popular food truck.
And this is Cornbread, not B-R-A-D, but B-R-D, like
not B-R-E-A-D.
No, not B-R-E-A-D.
Not
the bread.
It's like it's bread with corn, right?
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's very Iowa. So they're roasting their craft meats of beef brisket, burned ends, pork shoulder, pork ribs, turkey and sausage, and the trimmings are apple, pork and beans, cornbread pudding, creamy pineapple slaw, cucumber tomato salad. Apparently quite some interesting craft cocktails and mini beers on tap, and there's a more elaborate dinner menu with some chef's entrees that look just delicious. We will be reporting after Lana and I have personally made a visit.
Oh, I think – now, when things start out as a food truck, you never know. I mean, food trucks are kind of a new invention here in the Midwest, and they've been around for a few years, but some people really take off. And this one, my goodness, it's doing well. They started – in Ames a couple years ago, and they were a fixture at the farmer's market for a while, and then they went out to Alluvial Brewing Company out north of town and had some cornbread barbecue nights
there. Yeah, and apparently they've entered a lot of barbecue contests and have won many, many awards. It's they're serious.
Oh, yeah, I've heard those barbecue contests. They're pretty serious.
I think it's going to be a real addition to Ames' dining scene. And a lot of fun will probably be had there.
Oh, that sounds
so
great.
So we've got some hot new restaurant news happening around town.
Very good. So
all on train tracks.
It's kind of hard to avoid the train tracks here, but it'll be interesting to see if things have to grind to a halt when the train goes by. Actually, at the Lockwood Cafe, inside of the very substantially built grain elevator, it's pretty muffled. So we'll see how it
well,
things are.
Well, I expect for the patio piece at Cornbread, you're just going to have to stop the conversation when the train goes by.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
it's just
true.
Probably a feature of the architecture.
That's true. That's true. I remember way, maybe 20 years ago now, the Ames Downtown Farmers Market, I don't know what it was called then, just Ames
right,
Farmers
it
Market.
Was
it was
at that location.
It was
that's
at the
right.
old railroad depot, and you kind of made an event of it when a train went by. You just kind of smiled and used your hands. You couldn't talk, and the musicians stopped. But we live like that now. I mean, stopping and waiting for trains, well, that's what we do here. We are, when you're at the crossroads of the world, I mean, of course, the trains are going to come across your road sometimes.
Well, it's a beautiful old building, and I'm really glad to see it being put to,
it is.
A continuously a well-utilized space.
It's a nice train depot.
And I suspect that they have invested so much in this restoration that restaurant is going to be there for a long time.
Oh, so field trip, Donna, field trip. Let's go eat some cornbread stuff. It'll be good. Here is another event. Here's an upcoming event. Cook's Emporium, another fine establishment in downtown Ames.
Where they've also had a recent renovation.
Oh, new ownership.
We are getting so upscale here on our main street. Woohoo!
The 18th of this month, that's next Tuesday, June 18th, from 5:30 to 6:30, they often have cooking classes and demonstration classes. They're doing one on kombucha, and I'm going to be there talking about what I know about kombucha, and my friend Omar de Koch Mercado is going to be there, too. We love to get together and talk about our latest brews and what's going on. And
yes, Omar, is he going to do the coffee kombucha?
Oh, that's the latest thing. He's come up with coffee kombucha. And now he went through a few stages. The first one wasn't as good, but boy, I think he's got it now. And the coffee kombucha recipe will be there, I believe.
And I can vouch for Lana's kombucha. You are a good kombucha. It's consistent. You make different flavors.
Delicious. So come and find out about that. It's 5:30 to 6:30 at Cook's Emporium, downtown Ames. You can go to Cook's Emporium.
Which day of the week is that?
Tuesday. Tuesday evening, 5:30.
Tuesday the 18th.
Right.
Okay.
Right. There you go.
Lana Live at Cook's Emporium.
Oh, come and say hi. And come and say hi to Omar, too. I think we'll make a good tag team. That'll be good. Thanks for joining us today. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We talked about, some news items, and we talked about the wonderful world of lard and some poetry and stuff like that. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find us here every Tuesday at noon, repeated at 7 p.m. We had music by Belshazzar's Feast. Oh, yes, we did. This is Community Radio. Support Community Radio. I'm Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
Fine engineering by Evan Taylor. And some good information about a buffalo fish, too. There you go. All right, eat good food and enjoy life.
Thank you.